Disclaimer here, guys. I did something wrong with my audio in this intro and this outro, so it sounds a little wonky, and I apologize for that, but I promise you the interview itself sounds great. It sounds great.
Trust me.
Dude, you trust me.
Trust me. I'm like a smart person.
Yeah, I've never lied to you. I never have lied to you.
If you think that one person has all the answers, don't!
Welcome to Trust Me, the podcast about cults, extreme belief, and the abuse of power from two TikTokers who've actually experienced it. I'm Lola Blanc. I'm not a TikToker, you guys.
And I'm Megan Elizabeth, and I am a TikToker. I've made one of them, and it got, how many views did our TikTok get, Lola?
I think we got 500
Holy
views.
Holy shit, yes. We're professional TikTokers.
Guys, we joined TikTok. You know, you should probably follow us. We're a Trust Me cult podcast. Anyway, today our guest is Tora Bontrager. She is an activist and author of a book called Amish Girl in Manhattan, so-called because, that's right, she is a former Amish girl who probably lives in Manhattan, definitely did at some point. Tora is going to tell us about what it was like growing up with no electricity or indoor bathrooms or cars, speaking the Amish language, and what Rumspringa actually means.
We'll also discuss her tumultuous relationship with her mother, how some of the practices intended to not spoil the children can involve corporal punishment, and we'll touch on some of the abuse she experienced, to be continued in part two next week.
Yes, indeed. I'm so excited about this episode. I have been curious about the Amish lifestyle for so long. I feel like I got a lot of insight that unexpected things, you know, things I didn't think I would learn.
I'm obsessed with Amish life.
Are you?
Yes. I was so jealous of it when I was little because I had to kind of dress like the Amish and like look like the Amish, but I couldn't live in a town in the middle of nowhere with other people. I had to like go to normal school. And I was just like, make me Amish, God. Yeah.
You wanted to be Amish, not just dress normal at the normal school?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, that's just having the whole shebang. I didn't think that far in ahead. I didn't think, how about just not be in a cult? I was like, how about just be in a cult but no one can see you?
I mean, I sort of like fantasized about being Amish for like a week of my childhood just because I loved those books. The Boxcar Children. Do you remember those books?
Henry, Violet. Yeah, I remember.
Your memory is better than mine already. I don't remember their names. Benny?
The youngest is Benny. Henry's the oldest. Violet's the hot one. And then there's one other sister who no one cared about.
I feel like that was the sister I cared about. But, you know, who knows? But I loved this idea of, like, you know, having to survive and, like, make your own way and, like, light your own little fires in the boxcar.
The dump pit that they went to, like, get the, you know, they made, like, a little running water thing out of an old whatever. And they kept going to the dump and cleaning shit. And I was like, so in.
I know. It sounded so fun to me. We are not trying to minimize that the lifestyle that some people choose to have. But as a child, it seemed very appealing to me. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. It's survivalist. Yeah.
Well, anyway, please tell me.
Okay.
Before we get into our interview, what is the cultiest thing that's happened to you this week?
Okay. So it's kind of ironic, but the cultiest thing that's happened to me this week is actually me trying to take a little bit of control back and get help for being in a cult when I was younger. So I'm interviewing some therapists. A lot of them are cult specialists.
Wow.
But then a lot of them say that their way is the only right way. So very weird.
Oh, when we are not recording, I'm dying to know who it is you're talking to.
I mean, it's nobody famous. It's nobody. I'm just doing research on like the internet. Have you heard of it?
No. What is that?
But also something cool happened from TikTok, which was kind of culty-esque, which was I found a girl from my religion that I was raised in, and she started a group chat with like 50 people who left. So now I have a good cult chat going on of people
who
got out.
That's how many people are in there? Like dozens?
Yeah. There's a good chunk.
That's so fucking cool, Megan.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
And for the people who don't know what group she's referring to, it's the 2x2s or the
truth
the way or however they're referred to.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think that's really great. And I'm proud of you for doing that.
Thank you. How about you? What's the cultiest thing that happened to you this week?
Well, mine is sort of an extension of what I talked about last week. So I was having some health issues. I was having some recurring problems. And I was talking about how like, oh, man, I would do anything. You know, I could see how I would join a cult given this situation that I'm in. Well, this week, my brain took it a step further.
Ooh.
And it decided that it would make me panic about said physical symptoms. And I had, ladies and gentlemen, my very first panic attack.
Ooh, they're bad. They're bad.
And it lasted like 2.5 days. It was like in and out. And the only thing that only after being with somebody for a few hours and like trying really, really hard to focus and trying really, really hard to concentrate on what they were saying, would I come back down. But then as soon as I was alone again, it would like immediately happen again. And it's like nothing I've ever experienced. I just like didn't know that my brain could do this. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, you know, I'm not a I'm a pretty healthy, well-adjusted person. Like what I experienced, I've learned, is called derealization. Do you know what this is?
Tell me.
Well, shout out to Bo Burnham because he put it in his song, Googling derealization, hating what you find, in his new special, which is amazing, by the way. It is when the world doesn't seem real to you and you feel like totally disconnected from your body and like everything that you're looking at is like through. Different people describe it differently. Some people describe it as like looking at your life through a TV screen. Mm-hmm. For me, I was like, there's like a window in front of me and I can't like get into my body. Like it was hard to understand what people were saying. It was so hard to focus. And yesterday it just like culminated in me. My friend was coming over already, Frenchie, and we were supposed to work on something. And I was like, I think I have to go to the hospital because I think something's like actually wrong with me. So she FaceTimes me and I'm just like, oh, there's something wrong with me. I gotta go to the hospital. Anyway, long story short, health insurance sucks. I was never seen by anyone. But what did happen was that my girlfriend's like, I got to sit with a couple of them, and one of them, Danan, has experienced this quite frequently. Yeah. And she was like, this is normal. This is what this is. Like, it's okay. It's temporary. This is not like, you know, you're not dying. And I was like, are you sure?
It's impossible to believe. Like, if nobody's ever had a panic attack, have so much patience with the people in your life who have it, because they are unbelievable. They are relentless dickheads of a feeling that you can't think your way out of. It's pretty wild.
Whoa. Yes. And I was like, so then I was with Danan and Avital. We were all talking and we were talking about EMDR and how I should go. They've been going. We also end up talking about like healers and, you know, like Eastern medicine and like also some very new agey, like stuff that I would generally think is bullshitty. But I was like, oh, I fucking get it. Like, even more than I got it last week, because so much of what's happening is just like, because I believe that I'm stuck, like that is what's making me stuck. Mm-hmm. And all it takes to actually get out of it is to stop believing that you're stuck. But how do you make yourself stop believing? You just need like something that functions as a placebo, basically.
Right.
So I'm like, if that happens again, like I'll take a fucking spiritual healer. I don't give a shit. Mm-hmm. Whatever it takes.
Little side note. I totally believe in all that stuff. So just for listeners, I take the opposite view. Acupuncture is magic. You should go do that.
The thing is, like, whether they're real or not, they do work for people. And whether that's just a magical thing or a psychological thing, I think is essentially irrelevant as long as no harm is being done, you know?
Absolutely.
But anyway, I found these great. This is not an advertisement. This is just what happened. I went to Whole Foods. I found these like lists of supplements that have actual studies done about how they can alleviate anxiety, some of which are comparable to actual prescription pills. I got a fucking supplement called Anxiety.
Yep.
And that shit helped so much. So if you have this problem, I'm just saying herbs.
Damn.
Herbs can help.
Nice.
Herbs and friends. Hashtag herbs and friends.
Yep.
So that was my experience this week. That was an overshare, but you know what? That's what I'm here for, you guys.
Hey, cults overshare.
Cults overshare sounds like something to do with the singer Cher, but I don't know exactly what. Anyway, speaking of cults over Cher, let's talk to Tora Bontrager now, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
If you have your own story of being in a cult or a high control group, or if you've had an experience with manipulation or abuse of power you'd like to share, leave us a message on our hotline number at 513-900-2955.
Or shoot us an email at trustmepod@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome, Tora Bontrager. So nice to have you here today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So you were born into an Amish community in Wisconsin. Can you give us just like a basic rundown of what that looked like in terms of lifestyle? If we showed up to that community today, what would we see?
Well, the way that I was raised, I was born into one of the strictest traditional Amish families. And that meant that we didn't have running hot water, only cold water. We didn't have indoor bathrooms. We had to go to an outdoor toilet, even during winters when it was 40 below zero or felt that way. And then our mode of transportation was a horse and buggy, and we couldn't have cameras and no family portraits. So I don't have pictures of myself when I was a baby or any of my ancestors. We also speak English as a second language, and that language is Amish, and we don't speak English very fluently. I sound a lot different now than I used to 25 years ago.
Tell me more about that. The language is Amish. Can you say something in Amish?
Yeah, Vespidu Havasi Sok City in Amish.
Wow.
Is this German at all, or is it just a completely...
It's not German. Okay. For sociopolitical criteria, it meets that. And originally, it was a dialect of a certain part of Germany. But over 300 to 400 years of being in a different country, a different culture, it's evolved into its own language. So it meets all the sociopolitical criteria for being its own language. There are languages, like certain Nordic languages. I forget which one, Swedish and Danish or Swedish and something else. I always forget. That's classified as its own language, but they can actually understand each other. That's a sociopolitical criteria. But the difference between German, standard German, and Amish is so different that I can't carry on a conversation in standard German.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And when I speak to my German-speaking friends, they can't understand me unless maybe some of them who are linguists or happen to be maybe from this old part of Germany, they can understand some of it. But even so, it meets the criteria to be considered its own language. And so that's one of my life's missions is to get the language recognized. And I hate it when people say we speak Pennsylvania Dutch, or they poo-poo us, or me specifically, for saying we have our own language. It's a way to take away my identity and my heritage, and to basically erase that and say what I think about myself or identify as is insignificant.
Right. What did you say to us?
What do you want me to tell you in Amish?
Nice.
How many brothers and sisters did you have growing up?
I'm the oldest of 11, and three of them were born after I escaped. So I didn't get to really know them. I saw them a couple times during the first 10 or so years that I would go back every so often to see my brothers and sisters, but I haven't seen or spoken to anyone like since 2012, pretty much. Wow.
For someone who doesn't really know anything about Amish people, why can't they do electricity? What is the belief behind that? Do electricity. Use electricity.
The reason I was given when I was younger was, well, the Bible says so. That's why we can't have electricity, or we have to use a horse and buggy instead of a car. And when I got older, it still didn't make sense to me. So I thought, okay, I'll read the Bible for myself. It must be in there, right? I want to see where it says you can't have electricity. And
they definitely knew what electricity was when the Bible was written, for sure.
Exactly. And the verse I was given or cited as this is why we can't have all these things we can't have, to me, I interpreted that verse within the context of that chapter or whatever in my 11-year-old brain was, oh, Jesus is just saying you shouldn't be attached to material things. And that was, you know, actually a very like Buddhist way of looking at things. And I, of course, never even heard of Buddhism at that time, but that was just, you know, how my brain worked was, okay, I think there's a difference between being attached to material things versus having material things.
Right.
And I will just say for the record, I don't subscribe to Christianity or any religion. So if I say Jesus said this, Jesus said that, please know I don't. But like, I'm not a Jesus worshiper.
Right. Great to know. Yeah. Me neither.
Man.
I actually have this question. I saw you answered it in one of these articles, but all of the communities are different little worlds, right? Like, there's not like an overarching, like, this is how you do Amish. Like, did you know other people who had a completely different way of living? What's the difference?
Yeah. So in terms of the Amish, there's a range of traditional Amish. So this is another thing that I'm working on, like part of my life's work and part of the work of my nonprofit, the Amish Heritage Foundation, is defining these things, putting definitions and descriptions around what is Amish, the language and all of that. And what is traditional Amish, when you hear the word Amish in pop culture, just generally, it's referencing the traditional Amish. And the traditional Amish, the three things that define that for sure is not being allowed to have electricity, not being allowed to have cameras and take family portraits, because some people think there's a difference, and not being allowed to drive with cars, like motorized vehicles, having to use horses and buggies. So that's traditional Amish. And within that range, there's a difference from how I was born into not having like running water and indoor bathrooms, to all the way to where you have indoor bathrooms, you have running hot water, you're allowed to have bicycles to, you know, get around with. And you also are even allowed to have electricity in your place of business, as long as it's solar powered, you know, with a generator.
Wow.
Not powered by the electric grid. And so that's on the extreme, you know, liberal range, end of the range.
Are you guys allowed to like visit each other and like different communities and intermingle? Like,
yeah. So some of these questions, I still need to get answers about these questions myself, and I'll get to that in just a second. But if you are born in the Amish, traditional Amish, and when I say Amish, I mean traditional Amish. I don't mean New Order Amish or Beachy Amish or Amish Mennonite or all the other Amish, right? So if you're born into the Amish church, you're not supposed to leave the Amish church ever. You don't have a choice, even though they say you have a choice. That's your destiny. You have no say in your future. And even if you move to like a more modern end of the spectrum, you're going to get lots of grief from family, friends, or community in the strict end of the spectrum.
Right.
Depending on who they are, what their personal temperament is, right? But it's generally the ones who are the strictest look down on the ones who are the most liberal as being too English. English is anybody who's not Amish, including Chinese and Germans and, you know, anybody. English
Like means muggle, like, a different,
So what's that word that starts with an R? I'm so sorry, I'm forgetting it. That when you're like 18 or whatever, you go on your, what's it called?
Rumspringa.
But that's another major myth, another like myth busting.
Oh, really?
That I have to do.
Yeah, so that's not a real thing.
Rumspringa is a word that literally means running around. And it's just pointing to a period of time from age 16 or 17, depending on the community that you live in, until you're married inside the Amish church. That period of time is rumspringa. It is not a noun. It's a verb. Unless you're referring to the English translation, you could say, okay, well, it's a period of time. So that is a noun, maybe, I don't know, whatever. But in the Amish language, it's not a noun. It's a verb.
So because I am unmarried and I am over 18, am I rumspringa-ing?
Not over 18, 16 or 17.
Oh, it's 16 or 17.
Depending on the community. That's when it starts. And that's when you join the young folks. Now you're in a special group of people where you get to now go to the singings after on the Sundays when they're church. So we only have church every other Sunday. We have church in our homes. And whoever hosts church makes supper or dinner in the evening for the young folks and some of their friends who are, you know, married folks that they invite back, friends or family and or neighbors. But the thing is, this is now your opportunity to like check out the opposite sex, because of course LGBTQIA plus people are not recognized. So it's only straight heteronormative. And you're also allowed to date. And the young folks get together, they sing hymns, of course, you know, religious songs.
Sexy.
But also it depends on the community that you're in, because you might sing only German songs, like German, not Amish. like real actual standard German. And some communities allow a mix of German and English. And some communities, usually they tend to be on the stricter end, but also some, you know, in the very liberal end and the big communities with like hundreds of teens, they will use tunes like pop, whatever, you know, tunes are going on and set them to German songs that are songs about, you know, praising God or how our ancestors have suffered.
Wow.
So you won't hear Johnny Cash tunes.
So it's just like, I love God and I know it. Like something like that.
Whatever it is English. Like, I mean, German. I don't even understand the German. So I don't know what the hell we're singing, you know.
Even in a language you understand, then how is it even worship music at that point? That's so funny.
Think of the Catholic Church, like the traditional Catholic Church that did all the masses in Latin before the Protestant Reformation. Like, you didn't understand a damn thing that was going on in the service, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's funny because you're using a different melody and just taking the lyrics, though, which is extra funny because if you're just using the lyrics and you don't understand them, like, what are you? You're just basically doing a fun foreign version of, I Kissed a Girl, which, interesting choice, Megan.
Thank you.
A little dated, but, you know, whatever.
I know, I was like, wow. 2007? Like,
modern pop songs? Okay.
I mean, I don't even know what tunes they use now, you know, what the melodies are now. It could be whoever. Yeah.
Bad guy. It's like Billie Eilish.
Exactly.
Billie Eilish, but yeah. I wish I knew German so I could say a phrase in German in Billie Eilish's melody.
Who is finding out these pop songs? Like, do you have the radio?
Well, how it started originally was through school, because Amish children went to public schools or they had public school teachers. Even if the school was a one-room schoolhouse in the country with Amish-only kids, which was normal in huge Amish communities, they still had a public school curriculum and a non-Amish teacher, a state-certified teacher. And
I see.
That's where you learned all the patriotic songs and whatever else the teacher played on the piano or taught you in school to sing. That was before education became so censored by the church, before that movement started.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how that originally came in. So you would learn these tunes in school or these actual songs. Like, you might even have the lyrics of these Johnny Cash songs, for example. I'm using Johnny Cash only because that's the only person I remember. I know for sure. The Beatles too, actually. I don't know why I forgot that. But when I was 15, after I escaped and I heard actual Beatles songs, I was like, oh my God, that's what I was singing. Like, I recognized the tune. I knew everything.
Wow.
We all live in a house with no electricity.
Yeah, that was one of them. I was like, oh my God. Like, it was like this half traumatic, half like happy, like childhood memory. So I'm like, what is happening here? It was sort of like being suddenly sent into an alternate universe when I heard this Yellow Submarine and thinking that's an Amish song. That's not an English song.
Wow. Did you like these songs when you heard the actual versions? Or were you like, I'm traumatized, please turn it off?
No, I love those tunes. I love the Beatles tunes. And it was really the Johnny Cash ones or any country ones that I, within the first year, did not like anymore. I will always say country music is great for when you want to feel sorry for yourself or want to get depressed or want to stay depressed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why I love country music. Yep. So I guess that's me.
It's like emo. Yeah.
I know a lot of people listening and you yourselves, I don't mean to offend you, but this is just the way I look at it. I say
not at all.
I'm offended.
No. I read in an article somewhere that, like, a little boy was stuttering, so his dad put his toe under a rocking chair. You're nodding. This is true?
Yes, I know this person.
Megan, what a transition.
I'm sorry. I just looked back at our notes, and I'm like, is this kind of abuse just rampant? Like, there's sing-alongs, but then you stutter and your foot's put under a rocking chair?
This is not unusual. I don't think that the majority of Amish parents do that, but it's certainly not something that is going to raise a problem. People are not going to have a fit about it if they find out Because, okay, you're disciplining your child. Well, you know,
right.
Discipline, and you're being a good Amish parent by not spoiling your child, basically. You know, spare the rod, spoil the child kind of right. philosophy. And when you think about it, this is not unique to the Amish, but it's unique to remaining part of the religion and culture. This corporal punishment, this extreme form of abuse. I mean, this used to happen even in public schools and general mainstream society. I mean, nuns would slap kids, you know, with right. rulers. You'd get beatings, you know, in school, all of that. Like, this is something that I always try to put context around it. Like, don't be so shocked. This is in your own history. Any human right. history, you know, has this history. The problem is
totally
that enlightenment hasn't yet come to the Amish. Like, that's been actively prevented by the Christian right and protected, that kind of religion and exemptions from the rule of law, or, you know, child rights, women's rights, all that kind of
right.
stuff.
Right. That's a really interesting point. It's like you're preserving this sort of historical community, which on the outside is like, oh, horse and buggy, like no electricity. That's sort of quaint. But like, if we're actually preserving a historical community, history is pretty messed up. Mm-hmm. And to not, you know, be keeping up with progress in other areas besides just the cutesy ones is definitely like, that's a real problem for sure. Real quick, before we get too deep into that, I just want to like finish establishing some of the basics. Mm-hmm. So when you were growing up, did you know any non-Amish children? Like, did you know that you were different? How did you feel about your lifestyle?
So yes, we don't live in a commune with like actual walls where we can't see outside. We live in the countryside, rural areas, and we have non-Amish neighbors. And depending on what your family's business is, you'll see non-Amish clients. And certainly when you go to the store, you know, grocery store in town to buy things you don't grow or raise yourself, you see cars and non-Amish people. So that's not unusual. What is varies from community to community or from family to family is how much interaction you're allowed to have with your non-Amish neighbors, for example. And usually if you're younger, the kids are younger, the belief is that they're too young to understand the difference or what's going on. And there might be more interaction with non-Amish neighbors or visiting the neighbors or being friends with them, just depending on the situation. As the kids get older, again, depending on the family, but this definitely tends to be pretty common. Like, the restrictions around the girls are a lot harsher than the boys.
Of course.
You're not allowed to see your non-Amish neighbors as much anymore, play with them, because it's not considered a bad influence. Well, duh, child psychology says the early childhood development years are the most formative. So if you're waiting to shut off that access until you're, I don't know, 11 or something, the damage has already been done.
Right. Well, I'm guessing they're not big on child psychology, though, so.
No, not at all. Like, that's the same argument they used in the Wisconsin versus Yoder Supreme Court case about why the children need to quit going to school after eighth grade. Well, the non-Amish kids in the public school curriculum is a bad influence. It's going to be too much of a problem at that age. You know, they need to be surrounded only by the religion and our Amish beliefs and not be tempted by the non-Amish public school curriculum and children, blah, blah, blah. It's like, really?
Yeah. So you started questioning at a super young age, which I feel like is very unique. That doesn't happen that often. Can you tell us how and when you began to question, and was it related to the abuse that you experienced?
It was definitely related to the abuse. I, of course, didn't realize that until many years later, and I went through all this intensive therapy, which I'm still uncovering levels of. Mm-hmm. But I've pinpointed being aware of the abuse when I was 3 years old. So it started that young, when I realized that the adults were not there to help me or protect me. I could not depend on them. I would have to figure out how to take care of myself. That's a 3-year-old's thoughts. Unbelievable.
Three. Crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you just take us down that journey a little bit more?
Yeah. So that was when my parents moved to a different state, and I was born on the farm with my grandparents. So in the Amish traditional culture, which you don't see as much anymore because there aren't so many farmers anymore, but originally we're a farming culture. And there's a little house connected to the big house on the family farm. And what happens is when the grandparents get older, they move into the little house and one of their siblings move into the big house and they take care of the grandparents because we don't send our grandparents or elderly to nursing homes traditionally. So what happened was that my parents got married. They moved into the little house, and that's also a tradition or normal, you know, part of normal general Amish culture. If the kids don't have a place right away to move to, if there's a little house on the farm, you move into the little house. That's your transition until you can buy, you know, your own land or whatever. So for the first 3 years of my life, that was my environment, where I would run to the big house, to grandpa's house, where there were six aunts and uncles who weren't married yet. And they all like just loved me. You know, I was the little favorite grandchild. I was also very precocious. And so, you know, I was entertainment. So, you know, for most of the day, long hours of every day, I was around aunts and uncles who loved me and took care of me. I was only at my parents' house to sleep and eat in the morning and get dressed for Sunday for church, basically. And my mother was super, super depressed, and the marriage was super unhappy. My father is just awful, to say the least. Horribly, horribly abusive. And there was never any happiness in that household. It was always dark, physically dark and emotionally dark. And so I would get the love from my grandparents and aunts and uncles. At 3 years old, we moved to this other state where there were no aunts and uncles around, no close relatives around. Now I was alone all the time with just my mother, who was not interested in taking care of me.
Right.
And that was when I realized, oh, I'm on my own here. And my father worked away long hours because we didn't grow up on a farm ourselves. He worked for construction or worked for somebody else. So he was always gone. So one parent was always gone. The other parent didn't want me. Both parents were together. They were arguing and fighting. So that was my environment. And then because I was the oldest, I also got burdened with the responsibility of taking care of all of my siblings as they were born. I was the second mother. And I was my father's favorite kid. Everybody knew that. I was his favorite until I decided that I'm not going to stay in the Amish religion and do what he wants me to do because it's BS or not my choice. Then, of course, you know, like now I'm the worst person on the planet in his eyes. But anyway, up until then, there was this emotional incest kind of thing that was going on, or this parentification is another term in psychology that's coming out, where basically in my mother's eyes, I was the other woman. Her husband preferred the daughter instead of the wife. And the daughter got more attention than the wife. And I didn't get along with my mother. She and I have totally different personalities. And so I was her enemy on more than one level.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, it was just awful. And then I also needed to take care of the kids. I was 6 years old when I was told, go out and play, take care of your siblings, and don't wake me up. And
wow.
And then I got punished when I took the kids to the woods, to the blackberry patch, because you're not supposed to leave the yard. How the frick would I know? I'm taking care of the little kids, like you told me, and not waking you up.
Right.
Wow. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, I was mothering your children for you.
I'm 6 years old.
My bad. Yeah. Like, Jesus. Wow. That's so hard. I mean, did you believe in the religion?
Not in the beginning. Like, I did a lot of what I call memory mining when I wrote my memoir and kind of digging into what did I really think when I was first told about this God and Jesus? And I remember my mother teaching me how to pray, like the little kid's prayer that I had to say at night, and talking to me about God and Jesus. And I'm thinking, I don't get this. This is very confusing. Number one, like God and Jesus, why is there only one God, but two gods?
Right. It is confusing.
So that's one thing. Yeah. And then the other thing was that prayer I was taught at night was a German prayer. And I thought that it said that I am tired. I'm going to go to Ruth, which was my birth name that I was given. But in German, it was, I'm going to rest. And so that also made me confused. I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to pray to God, but I'm praying to myself.
A much healthier way to go about it, in my opinion.
But yeah, I was not impressed by this God.
When I was a little kid. Not a lot to be impressed by. It's kind of a dickhead.
So, but then I quickly forgot about that, or it got drowned with the brainwashing, the fear of going to hell. So that quickly comes into play, that if you do not do what you're told, if you don't obey your parents, especially when you're a little kid, it's obey the parents. It's not, you know, obey the church rules. It's you have to obey your parents.
Right.
Because if you don't, God is going to send you to hell. And so that's what you hear also as you get older. And then it's, well, that's because the Bible says so. We need to do this or that because the Bible says so. Mm. Well, we're born Amish, so we have to use horse and buggy and we can't use electricity. If you break the rules of the church, the law of Amish law, you're going to go to hell for sure. And the one thing to understand about Amish religion is that, number one, we don't proselytize. Number two, we don't say that we know for sure that you can get into heaven. We say that your best chance at getting into heaven is to remain in the Amish church for the rest of your life.
You don't even get a guarantee? That's messed up, dude.
Yeah, so that's what makes the brainwashing, the terrorizing, it's really terrorizing, yep. Religious terrorizing, makes it so effective, is that you never know if you're going to be good enough. Even your best is not necessarily good enough. Like every day, what if I die? Or depending on how much you think about this, whether consciously, subconsciously, or unconsciously, that's what's running in the background of pretty much every Amish kid is, I might go to hell. And hell is, you know, like the Lazarus story in the Bible. I think it was, Abraham. I mean, I think it's a good thing I've forgotten the names of these characters. But the story about how this person gets sent to hell and begs Abraham, I think, or somebody, you know, for just one drop of water.
A drop of water. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was told that every night. Really? One drop of water on your tongue, you would do anything for it.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the image that's branded in your psychology as an Amish kid.
Yeah. Wow, that's not a story I got growing up. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I think I was telling you, Lola, the other day that I have like so much art from when I was 3 or 4 of myself, like God pushing people in the lake of fire. And I'm like, you guys didn't want to send me to anyone or like
that she was drawing as a kid.
I was drawing it.
It was probably seen as a great thing. Oh, she's,
I guess,
like absorbing what we're teaching her. How wonderful.
So psychotic. Oh, it's psychotic.
Yeah. I mean, I used to go to bed and praying to God, who I was terrified of, don't let me die tonight. I don't want to go to hell. That was my prayer as I got older.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
Oh, just like quick aside, it makes me think of attachment theory and how when you don't have a secure parent who you know is going to be there, you get like anxious as an adult or avoidant. I got to imagine there's got to be some connection too if your eternal security is something that's constantly in question. Like anything I do, will it get me into heaven? Will it not? Will I burn in the eternal flames or will I be saved? I don't know. There's something about just like your conception of your safety in the world that I feel like is formed during those years that seems very just hard and traumatic.
I love that you mentioned that. I didn't even really conceptualize that until just very recently, probably a few weeks ago when I was talking to one of my friends. We were talking about, because he and I had similar experiences with the whole parentification thing. And he mentioned, think about that lack of safety, not having safety. And like, I'm not a psychologist or therapist. I know enough to be able to understand most pieces myself, but I don't know what to say exactly about that lack of safety about after you die, which I think would be a great conversation all by itself.
Yeah. What age did you guys start getting disciplined in the church?
when you're a baby before you walk.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How does one discipline a baby?
Spanking.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It gets worse and worse, you know. And it also depends on the mother's disposition.
Right.
On how hard the baby gets spanked. If you're in church with a baby, small children, they're crying, you have to leave the service and go to the bedroom.
Yep.
Because you're being a bad mother if your baby cries. And if you can hear the baby crying from the bedroom, now you're an even worse mother, and babies will get spanked and their hands covered over their mouths.
Yeah.
Wow.
Would you get told if you don't stop crying, you're going to get another spanking?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. I forgot about that one, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, shut up. However it was said in Amish, because I'm now like going into my Amish brain and I'm just like finding it hard to translate. But yeah, it was the same thing.
Two questions about this. Number one, do you have freedom from this belief now, or is there always a part of you that's like going to hell?
No, I don't have a part of me that thinks I'm going to go to hell because of this Christian God or Amish God or biblical God. I don't believe that kind of God exists. If such a God exists, it's some human tyrant, you know?
Yeah. It's Elon Musk.
So yeah, I don't believe that. I still don't know what happens after you die. I'm still coming to terms with that. Is it just extinction? Or is there something that happens with the laws of physics? Energy just changes form. So like, which part of me is energy?
Right.
Is it only physical, or is there such a thing as a soul or spirit or whatever? Like, that's something that still bugs me. And I don't like it. I don't like thinking about the possibility that I might, according to the Buddhists, have another life, like get reborn or something.
I was just going to say, as long as I'm not reborn, I'm cool with it. God, don't make me do this again.
Like, the way I think, okay, this is great. Like, if this is it, it's just a physical thing and my physical body disintegrates, turns into dust, whatever. Awesome. I would love that, you know, so I never have to go through this horror and terror and just hell. This is hell, what I've had. Like, there is no, you know, burning alive in a lake of fire or whatever for the rest of your life or eternity. I live that every freaking day because of the traumas and the rapes and all other sorts of abuse, you know. So I'm already living that. I don't need that. I don't need more of that. I would love if this was it. When my physical body died, everything about me is dead. If it gets reborn, I'm pissed beyond piss. Because if I do get reborn, that means I had a life before this and some tyrant has control over me and decided this is the life I'm going to be born into. F that person.
Yeah. And yeah.
If you are reborn, I have confidence you will be reborn into a much better life.
But also,
that's not a thing. I'm sorry. I don't know for sure, but my personal opinion is that's not a thing.
Well, my second question, you kind of touched on it, was I read an interview with you where you're like, people from the outside are shown this world of Amish and, you know, the movie Witness and TV shows and stuff where it's like really modest, good-hearted family people, which I'm sure is there. But there's also this huge world of like sexual abuse and child abuse. And I was reading about a woman named Mary Byler who was raped by her brothers. She told a police officer, her brothers admitted it, and they were not in trouble, but she was shunned from the community.
Well, that's not unusual. I mean, that happens to everybody.
That's crazy.
That's the standard operating procedure.
Mm.
It happens over and over and over and over and over again. Even right now, to this day, it's happening. It's never going to stop until somebody decides to enforce the law, and law enforcement is in the pockets of the Amish bishops and clergy, and the Amish clergy and bishops are having their free reign thanks to the Christian right, who are lobbying Washington for extreme religious freedom exemptions instead of just abiding by what the Constitution says, which is religious freedom, not extreme religious freedom.
Right.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about your experiences? I mean, you don't have to go into detail. It's whatever you're comfortable with. But you yourself were sexually abused. When you told people, what happened?
At the time, I was still talking to my brother, and he reacted appropriately, which was wanting to murder the uncle. So two uncles raped me repeatedly. And I told him to tell all the other siblings and the parents, because I was not speaking to the parents even at that time.
How old were you?
This was when I was 29. I didn't even start talking about this to anybody until I was 29 years old.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, one of the reasons I didn't talk about it earlier was because I thought it was an isolated happening, because there's no talk about sexual assault, rape culture, that kind of stuff. Like, I really thought this would only happen to me. It never occurred to me that this would happen to anybody else, or has happened, or that these uncles are repeat offenders, serial lifelong child rapists. I thought it was just something that happened to me. And of course, like, that made me wonder again about the supposed good God, right? I rationalized away not talking about it on top of that by not wanting my cousins and my grandmother to know that they had a father and sons who were rapists. And what made me not talk about it even more was I knew this was going to be the perfect story for the Amish church to tell their kids, see what happens if you leave, you're going to get raped and you deserve it. Like, that's God punishing you. And so I didn't want them to have that ammunition. But ultimately, what bought my silence was one of the uncles, the first uncle, telling me the next day, if you ever tell anyone, I'm going to kill you. And he didn't say, I'm going to kill you. He looked at me and said, you know, you can't ever tell anybody about this, right? And I knew that was what he meant.
That's what he meant. Yeah.
And, you know, he was violent. He had told me other stories before he raped me. And in hindsight, I can see this was like grooming me, setting me up about how
exactly.
Yeah.
He was involved in drug running and things like that.
That's terrifying.
Is there a lot of drug running? I read that once. Is that true?
Not the majority, but there are definitely major drug operations going on in the Amish.
Wow.
It's kind of like asking, oh, are there lots of Americans who are billionaires? No, but the billionaires that exist are pretty powerful. It's the same with people and drugs.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of them, but there are some who they're major drug runners and in the business.
So he's this terrifying figure. It makes perfect sense. How old were you when that happened?
I was 15. So this was the uncle that I went to escape to, thought he was going to keep me safe.
Oh, no.
Less than a month before I was there.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah. I'm so sorry.
I see what you're saying about the Amish people being like, this is what you get.
That makes sense.
Okay, and that's where we'll leave it for part one for this week. Stay tuned next week for part two. Megan?
Yes.
Time for the question.
I'm ready.
Would you join the Amish?
Well, if my choice was to be in the Amish or what I was raised in, I would choose the Amish. But any other, no, absolutely no. No.
What if it was like 1 week only?
What do you mean? I'm an Amish for a week?
Yeah.
No. Why?
All right, great.
So I'm going camping for a week. No, I don't want to camp for a week.
I don't think that I would either, although it seems fun to have your phone in the barn. I feel like I would get more done if my phone was in the barn and not in my pocket at all times. But other than that, probably not the cult for me.
Yeah, don't think so.
But kudos to anyone who is living that lifestyle and is happy and healthy. We support you in that, as long as it is not what Tora experienced.
And a lot of other women.
Not that anyone Amish is listening to this, but maybe in like 3 years when they get out, they'll listen to this. You know what I'm saying?
Amen.
Okay.
Well, as always, you guys, remember to have an awesome week. We'll talk to you again next week. And remember to follow your gut, watch out for red flags, and never,
never, ever, ever trust me.
Bye.
Bye.